Let's show some love to one of my site sponsors, Bloom.
This feels charged, heavy. Like we're about to open up something that can never be put away again.
Create a free account at bloomstories.com, and if you'd like a premium subscription to unlock everything, use promo code GIRLONTHENET to get up to 50% off.
There's no one around for miles here. We could do anything we want out here.
This is The Keys to the Kingdom by Osmer van Alsberg, read by Pandora Blake. A week before her 20th birthday, Riva Avarith, Duchess heir of the Grand Fiefdom of Avarith, instructed the estate staff that she was not to be disturbed until the day of her ascent. The calligraphy with which she printed and signed this pronouncement is said to have been more ornate than the most sacred texts of the most devout hermits. So vital was her privacy that she refused even a mirror in her bedroom. So serious was her concentration that she sentenced an invading moth to immediate beheading and carried out the sentence herself. In this last week of her childhood innocence, she was to prepare herself for the responsibilities of adulthood. In service to her rebirth, she had furnished her own cocoon, a tomb in which a sheltered heiress would die, and a benevolent leader, a woman who answered to no one, would emerge. On her first day of isolation, she swam in the depths of her mind. She cleared her head and reviewed each moment of her past. 2 decades of experience, and each moment pressed on her like a sword against her neck. She relived each scene at 1,000 times its original speed. When her recall was imperfect, she cursed her imperfections. When she recalled her shame, she chastised the child and forgave the sin. When she recalled her achievements, she reprimanded her pride and cursed her attachment to external honours. To glory in accomplishments is to admit their unlikeliness. She recalled her hungers and her satisfactions, her needs and her disappointments. She accepted the contradictions in moments of confusion, and saw nuance in what had seemed simple before. She remembered her infancy, her adolescence. She remembered all the way up to a week before her 20th birthday, when she had come into isolation to meet herself. She had slaughtered a moth. Her life passed before her, 1,000 times quicker still, and as those moments passed into an ever-shortening moment, she experienced the whole of her existence as a singularity. She had done it. She had mastered her entire life, and all it had to offer. In short, she had learned nothing. In her whole life, she had never lived. Now she knew this. Now she could move on. On her second day of isolation, she drafted a letter to whom it might concern. She wrote of a young lady who had served her manor well, vouched for by the highest authorities that she could perform any function required of her. Be assured, innkeeper, farmer, magistrate, or whomsoever you be, this maiden is of fine stock, and your virtue by respect to her position will not go unrewarded on this earth or any other. She signed the note with a flourish that could only be royal, and sealed it with the emblem of the Avarithine carpenter ant. Under nightfall, she cracked open her door. She felt her way down the long spiral of stairs, further than she had ever explored within her own home. These were servants' quarters. Somewhere in these depths, she would find a maid's uniform. She would flaunt no sway from her mother's name nor her own. Virtue would be her only advantage. She found the scullery and, still drying, a uniform like every other uniform on the line. She pulled at the sleeves, dripping with water, and she pulled harder, tearing the garment from the line and tearing the shoulder. No matter. It would make her seem more humble. She rearranged the other dresses so nothing appeared missing. If any of the staff were disciplined for her crime, she would reveal what she had done. She would be forgiven, but her reputation would suffer. Her mother, Moira, Duchess of Avarith, was renowned for her grace and perfection. For her daughter to don a commoner's robe would be scandal, but to live outside the castle for even a day would be unheard of. Such contempt for tradition could lead to revolution. Reva knew the risk, but as Duchess, she would have to take risks. The educational opportunity was too compelling to refuse. She returned to her room and removed the remaining trappings of royalty. In her isolation, she had no mirror. As she pulled on her new dress, she could only guess how wretched it looked. The neck was so loose that her shoulders kept slipping out, one at a time. The sleeves were long enough to reach her knees, and as she rolled them up, she could only imagine how fat her arms must look, how wide her waist. Her body became square and modest, and while her royal bearing and educated manner might stand out, she trusted it would not overwhelm the impression given by the rest of her. She thought of packing as though on vacation and scolded herself for the indulgence. She should have no advantages other than her letter of introduction. A ruler should be as capable as anyone else and be able to rise above harsh circumstances to regain the throne once more. She should be more capable than others, and she would rise up from nothing on her own merits. A true leader acquires honour and does not simply receive it. By daylight, she had seen a ladder leaning against the property's wall. No one would miss it, she was sure, and as she stepped into the night, she climbed the borders of the castle. Once atop the barricade, she pulled the ladder up behind her and descended as carefully as she had climbed. With home and civilization behind her, she dragged the ladder behind her like a bridal train. The woods were vast enough to lose armies, dense enough to let through only a few scattered slivers of moonlight. Reva felt her way from tree to tree, counting carefully so she could feel her way back. After the 100th tree on her right-hand side, she let the ladder drop behind her, and after 100 more, she came upon the nearest village. No lights showed. The streets were dark. Even the tavern at the edge of town was empty. And she kept walking beyond the peasant farmlands until she reached the jagged mountains that overlooked the sea. She walked until morning and through the next day until the winding mountain path stopped abruptly at a humble door. She knocked. The door opened into an expanse which belied the external appearance of the hovel that had seemed so modest against the majesty of the mountains, sky, and sea. As the door slid closed, the cavern before her seemed to grow. She walked down an incline that seemed as long as the mountain itself, lined with candles that did not flicker in the wind. She followed their trail into the heart of the earth until it stopped at a balcony overlooking an enormous library. As she stood there, lanterns overhead blazed into flame of their own accord. The room beneath her was so great that their light failed to reach the very bottom. She was so weary she could not comprehend the abyss beneath her. She leaned against the railing, peering down, before she felt herself yanked backwards. "Stupid girl," a woman's voice spoke. "If you fall, I'll have to get another one." "Another what?" Reva asked, looking up. The woman was old and dark and strong. "Another assistant, what else?" Reva blushed, but did not object. She apologised for intruding and offered the letter of introduction. "I couldn't be bothered about royalty, love. The fact that you're here makes you mine, and I shan't be needing assurances from faraway aristocrats that you're standing here before me. Reva felt she should protest, but could not find the words. She continued to hold the letter aloft. If you really want me to take it, I will. The woman snatched the letter and, tearing it to pieces, spoke without reading. Dear Madame Krolitz, we hereby offer you another unfortunate case of inbreeding and poor planning, and hope that you will hide her useless face from our equally useless society. Please allow her to latch onto your dried-up tits, and feel free to beat her until she develops a backbone. Sincerely yours, Nothing Matters. She scattered the pieces of the letter over the balcony, and Reva watched them sparkle in the light as they twirled and fell. That's not what it said, she muttered. Oh, is that so? The woman said. She had not spoken any louder than before, but the hint of wrath in her tone seemed to shake the ground at Reva's feet. She wanted to apologise, but the woman spoke. I acted hastily. If you really want me to read it, you can gather the pieces for me. You'll find a ladder against the rail there. Reva felt faint at the thought of more climbing. She protested. Please, miss, I've travelled all night and all day to reach you, though I knew not where I might come. My eyes are heavy and my legs sore. I will do your bidding and serve to your satisfaction, but at present I am weary beyond the strength of my will. The woman stared at Reva, though her gaze seemed to land somewhere deeper. Reva turned her attention to the floor, then back at Madame Krolitz, and back to the floor again. I will await your return, the woman said, and opened a book that flew into her hand. Reva waited a moment before she dared to penetrate the impossible interior. What organisation had created this monument of isolation? This shrine to wasted effort? She hesitated as she lifted herself over the railing, wondering how infinite her task might be. Each step down brought to her face a new shelf of books in scripts she could not read. They were all covered in a cover's thickness of dust, and when her movements created the slightest disturbance, a stale cloud would rise to choke her eyes and throat. By the time she'd gone 1,000 steps, she had learned to step carefully. The grace of gentle descent took all that remained of her concentration. In 1,000 steps more, she could see the bottom rung, and after another 1,000, she landed on solid ground. All manner of debris had accumulated here, and she felt the urge to organise, though she knew not what she saw. Within the bends and folds of the strange objects around her, she found the pieces of her letter and collected them into a pile. The drawers of what might have been a table hid a few, and she retrieved them. What might have been a chair, had human anatomy been as varied as a plant's, housed more, and within the clear shells of creatures that seemed made of sand and sugar, she found dozens of fragments, more than she remembered seeing fluttering down. The final few pieces were under a door that seemed familiar in its banality. She gathered every scrap and scooped them up in the front of her dress, taking care that they should stay safe during her ascent. Though she tried to count her steps again, staying awake occupied most of her attention, and she lost count somewhere after 700. She tried to rest by weaving her arm through the rungs of the ladder, but they were spread too far apart to gain a secure position. She continued, step after step, occasionally shifting which hand held her bundle. Her thin shoes were worn through, and she let them drop to the floor below. Madame Krolitz would no doubt ask her to retrieve them tomorrow, but in the meantime they were more an encumbrance than a help. She resolutely continued up the ladder, admiring her own strength of character, until she climbed over the banister and collapsed in a heap. There, there, said a maternal voice that lifted her up and cradled her. You should get yourself some rest. We can postpone your punishment for when you wake up. Her eyes would not open, but she felt the softness of a bed of rose petals. She sank into it and was covered on all sides. Though she was furious at her weakness, the comfort was irresistible. She slept. She awoke in a pile of mulch. She stood up in a panic, batting away the dirt and small insects that crawled on her. The madame had removed her dress, and by the bed she saw a suit laid out, which seemed tailored for a boy her size. Modest brown pants, a ruffled shirt, a vest, and a leather cap she had to squeeze around her head. It was unlike any outfit that had been provided to her before, but it fit her figure, and she imagined it suited her, in a way. "Good morning, dear," came Krolitz's voice from behind her, and Reva instinctively curtsied, though she had no skirt to drape. "I hope you slept well." The woman sat behind a simple wooden desk, where books and papers circled her like scavenger birds. "Yes, madame," Reva said, though she felt more troubled by the woman's well-wishes than she had been by her insults. "I apologise for the first impression I gave you yesterday. I had been without rest for some time prior to our introduction, and I had travelled over hill and vale to reach you. Any ill manner I displayed, I can assure you, was purely a function of my exhaustion, and shall not be repeated." The woman pushed up her glasses and smiled. "Thank you," she said. "That was an articulate and humble apology." Reva breathed a sigh of relief. "But it does not forgive your impertinence. Come here." The girl paused, but she pointed her toe bravely with the savoir-faire of her breeding. Madame Krolitz pushed herself up and waved the girl closer. "When you are in my home, you will follow my command." "Yes, madame," Reva said. "I have devoted my life to study and the acquisition of knowledge. If you are to linger here, you will learn as I have learned, through service and discipline." Reva swallowed as the woman's arm touched her waist. "Consider it your rent that you are to receive these punishments at the beginning and end of each day, and throughout as needed." "What punishments are those, madame?" Reva said, but she could already feel herself being pulled across the woman's lap. The movement robbed her breath. As Krolitz's hand clapped down across her backside, Reva felt anger rise in her. No one, not even the Duchess, her mother, had ever violated her person in this savage manner. She sought to calm herself, remembering this was the life of a commoner, this was the daily physical abuse from their elders. This was the experience she had come to savour. She kept herself from crying out and suppressed any squirming that might have been her instinct. The pain that burned in her backside made her recall new memories that she was certain she had never had. Her body seemed to melt into the woman's will and lost all form of its own. She let herself become interested in her anger and in the hopelessness she felt. As the woman's open hand came down again and again, striking thunder with each blow, she pictured herself as the one source of light in this cavern. She maintained her poise, even as her breeches and her knickers were pulled down off her frame. She would not feel humiliation. She would feel pride, unjustly handled in this indelicate manner. The pain of those giant hands against her bare skin threatened to unsettle her, but she held in her cries. She would not give credence to a brute, would not even acknowledge these aggressions. If the woman knew whom she was dealing with, she would be very sorry indeed. The spanking continued for several minutes, then an hour, then the remainder of the day. The burn of it moved through her in place of a sun overhead. In the underground, time did not move, and all durations were the same. The woman only finished her task when Reva finally let herself make the beginning murmurs of distress. Despite her best efforts, tears formed in her eyes, and as they dripped onto the floor in front of her, she felt their weight. Girlish, broken tears. She was glad to have them squeezed out of her. She wanted to be free of them. Soon the rest of her began to weep, in aching, faraway gasps. "You're a naive, stupid girl, and you'll have to be much smarter if you're ever going to lead your people," said the woman. Reva felt shame rush to her cheeks. She had thought herself superior to her accustomed luxury, but she had been coddled. She couldn't even withstand the slight discomfort of a little spanking. What would she do in a war? As she fell upon the floor, she apologised to her madame. She would prove herself today, she was sure. "Not today, my child, but soon." This was The Keys to the Kingdom by Osmer van Alsberg, read by Pandora Blake. This audio production is copyright dreamsofspanking.com 2020. Dreams of Spanking is an ethical, independent producer. Please show your support by paying for the spanking scenes and audio stories that you watch and listen to.